Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee of Human Resources and open a public hearing this afternoon on Senate Bill 611. I apologize that not all of the committee members are here, but we have waited for 15 minutes, and we're going to get started because I see that we have a lot of people to testify, and this is an important issue, and we want to hear about it. So what I'm going to do first is you may have signed the number one sheet. That's not how I'm going to start this morning or this afternoon.
Whatever day it is.
Whatever day. This evening. I am going to start with Susan Wilson from the Health Licensure Office and Larry Young from Oregon Department of Justice. And Donelda, I don't know if you want to come up as well. Donelda Dodson from the Health Division. And the reason I'm doing it in this order is I'm going to have Katie give a little intro as well. Sorry. Staff looks at me like, the reason I'm doing it in this order is, first of all, I want to identify some of what we're going to be dealing with today prior to having this public hearing, our public testimony, because we might want to have some other questions when we hear from the Health Licensure Office. So, first, Katie, will you give us a little bit of an introduction to our bill today?
First of all, let me tell you, in your packet of information, there are several pieces here. There is the staff major summary from the Senate Committee on Health and Human Services. There is the fiscal impact statement prepared by LFO. There is a letter from the Susan Wilson, the administrator of the Health Licensing Office. And you also have two charts. One deals with revenue and expenses, and the other one deals with the number of licensees is the main column that I'm interested at on that particular chart. This bill, Senate Bill 611, comes from Senate Committee on Health and Human Services, Two Ways and Means. It does several things. One, this particular board has been under the Health Division. It's been appointed by, I think the members have been appointed by the Health Division. This transfers to the governor the authority to appoint members, and then they would be confirmed by the Senate. It allows the board to accept and expend donations, contributions, and grant funds. It increases their initial and annual renewal license fee from $500 to $2,000. And this, the reason for this, my understanding is that they've had inadequate revenues to cover the expenses, and the licensees have indicated that this is acceptable. At least that's my understanding. And also, there was a sunset originally on this bill, or not on the bill, but on the statute, and this eliminates that sunset provision and declares an emergency and effective on passage. It's actually this sunset tomorrow, this particular board. And so that's kind of in a nutshell what this bill does.
Okay. I guess we'll start then with this little...
Senator Kitab, members of the committee, Katie has pretty much explained what the bill 611 does. And I am here today as a representative of the Health Licensing Office. I am Susan Wilson, and the Board of Directors for Midwifery is a health-related board within the Health Division. As she has stated, Senate Bill 611 repeals the sunset, which will also repeal the licensing and regulatory law, which has been in place since 1993. The legislature initially enacted the 1993 legislation to improve access to maternity care for Oregonians, for women who use direct-entry midwives for their care providers. The law was intended to provide third-party reimbursement, and licensing and enforcement or regulation was the method under which third-party reimbursement could be realized. The standards for the Board of Direct-Entry Midwifery are set forth through statute and by the board. It's a seven-member board, and the board has licensure, examination, and disciplinary authority. The Board of Direct-Entry Midwifery currently uses the Health Licensing Office services and staff, and each of the boards within that office, and I've listed those those boards, they range from respiratory care therapists to body piercing. Each of those boards and programs, revenues from licensing and examination fees pay for their specific regulatory and administrative issues. Once again, the reason the board has been able to exist is by using this shared staff, but for the last three bienniums, we have identified fiscal issues as the major impediment to this board, and those factors are highlighted by about three things, which I think you should focus on during my testimony. 1998 litigation has increased legal costs and basically exhausted revenues for this board. They have a carry-forward debt for the new biennium. Also, the number of licensees since 1993 has decreased from 54 to the number 36 as we speak today.
Madam Chair?
Senator George?
Was that because of the lawsuit and the fear that I might be the next one that was going to get sued, or do you have any idea why the drop in the number of licensees?
Senator Tutub, Senator George, the drop has been primarily because third-party reimbursement hasn't come to fruition for most of the practitioners. And because of that, and I believe that some of the direct entries, midwives can testify to this more accurately, because of that, licensees have dropped away, since that was the general reason for licensure in the first place.
Thank you.
So the number of licensees today, which has declined over the last three biennia, is now at 36. And as Katie pointed out, the licensing fees have increased once. They've doubled since the 1993 implementation of this law. We are requesting through the bill for the 1999-2001 biennium a $2,000 licensing fee. And we're using a figure which I presented to Senator Tutub in a letter. It amends the original fiscal impact statement that I sent to fiscal staff. We're requesting this based on 24 licensees. I received that number from the Association of the Midwifery Society as seeing midwives that have verbally indicated their willingness to pay $2,000 in annual fees for the next biennium. And I want to point that out as a number that I was provided by the association. I also want to report that the legal deficit of $13,037, which was reported to fiscal staff in May, has increased to $14,604. And we are currently using the services of risk management for handling mediation in the Ninth District Court. This is a good segue to move my comments and to Larry's hands, because I think he can answer some of those unknown cost factors that I can't answer related to that case.
All right.
Yeah. Sure, Keaton.
Senator Yee, question for Sue. So why didn't the third-party reimbursement come through? You say the drop in membership is because the third-party reimbursement hasn't come through. Or hasn't come to fruition?
Senator Tutub, Senator Yee, that it varies within counties is what I have been told by the groups of midwives that I've had conversation with. We have endeavored to meet with OMAP and other representatives, and I believe that there are certain standards that you must meet as a practitioner in order to qualify for third-party reimbursement. And we're at the table right now trying to understand what OMAP needs and what the midwives need to provide, and that's still in negotiation in some of the counties. But some of the counties, I believe, are providing third-party reimbursement to midwives in the state.
Follow-up. So you're trying to standardize the standards so all the counties have the same standards that will meet OMAP requirements.
Senator Tutub, Senator Yee, I believe that under OMAP, the counties vary and differ, and that is a question OMAP could answer, but I'm not equipped to answer that at this time.
Do you have a...
So you mean they haven't come up with a standard that they will accept?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, my experience from a local level is that I'm Denelda Dodson with the Oregon Health Division, and the various plans that are out in the community have panels that provide services. And so they select their panel from which their enrollees can select their providers. So whether it's a direct entry midwife, a physician, whomever, they have to be selected to be on that panel before that plan will reimburse for those services. And some of the criteria is that they need to be licensed, which is one of the reasons why the board is very important for direct entry midwives.
So every county has a different panel that sets up standards.
They don't set up different standards, but they select the panel from the providers in their community. So they decide who will be their provider panel. For Salem, for Pendleton, they have different panels that they select from. When you get your insurance book that lists all the people that you can go to for your care, that's a panel.
And
so you understand, Senator Yee, that a panel is not somebody who's a decision-making body. Mm-hmm. They are the people that give the service.
And they don't have the same standards?
That doesn't have anything to do with it.
Right.
Standards don't have anything to do with what she says.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the panels accept or not accept the...
No, the panel, Senator Yee, is a group of either physicians, caregivers, midwives, whomever they have, a number of people who provide the health care service, not a decision-making body.
So why don't they give the reimbursement for the licensed midwives?
Madam Chair, that is an issue that each of the plans would have to address. It's the plans that decide who is going to be on that panel.
Oh, I see.
Madam Chair, maybe to clarify this a little bit, how many of these midwives, 24 that have accepted, are probably the only ones that have been allowed on the various panels, regardless of what health plan it is? Is that right? No? Okay. I'm just trying to find it. How many midwives have been allowed the privilege of being on panels of, you know, various health plans? Zero? Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
And we'll hear from those midwives a little later in
that. Nobody did.
Need the, Mr. Young.
Chairman Chita, my name is Larry Young. I'm with the Attorney General's Office Human Services Section, and attorneys in my section provide services to both the Health Division and to the board that is involved in this bill. Currently, the Department of Justice has been providing services to the board in response to a complaint that was made about the practice of a particular midwife. As a licensing board, the board is required to investigate that and to take appropriate action as it deems fit. There has been a complaint. Actually, there have been four complaints. One complaint has been investigated. One complaint has had some tentative action taken upon it. A lawsuit developed in U.S. District Court, which was quickly dismissed by the court and has gone to the Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, and that suit is currently pending in front of the Ninth Circuit. In the course of representation of the board, the Attorney General's office charges the board for its services, the standard rate that it charges all state agencies, at least $78 per hour. Over the course of this particular biennium, there have been a number of board meetings, and there, of course, has been legal work, and the latest figures that I have obtained from the Department of Justice indicate that there is currently unpaid a bill totaling $15,197.32. That is not the total bill that the Department of Justice has directed to the Board of Direct Entry Midwifery certain portions of the bill have been paid. It also should be understood that Risk Management Division of the Department of Administrative Services has taken over a large portion of the defense costs in that U.S. District Court and Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals case. So a lot of the money that has been charged for attorney services on that case is being paid by Risk Management. Yet there still remains $15,000 from the Department of Justice. I'm here to provide that information to you. I would note that there are three other complaints regarding practices of at least two other midwives that are pending, one of which involves a fetal death. And to my knowledge, those complaints have not been thoroughly investigated, and there may be action taken by the board once they are. And that could involve further legal services. So in considering your budget, it is possible that there will be considerable legal expense in the next biennium as well as in this current biennium.
Okay. Other questions?
Comparing this with the, let's say, all of the MDs who are providing any birthing services, how would that rate? Because I'm sure they have a board similar to this. Do they come back and we defend them as far as the board? I mean, what do the numbers look like comparing this group versus that group?
You mean with respect to number of complaints? Senator George, I can't give you an accurate figure. I do know we have an attorney in the General Counsel Division that spends the greater part of his time handling cases in front of the Board of Medical Examiners. But the Board of Medical Examiners is charged with licensing functions for not only physicians but for other entities as well. This board is the direct entry midwife board. It does not encompass all midwives in the state of Oregon. In fact, the vast majority of midwives are medically trained midwives, and they come under the control of the Board of Medical Examiners. I'm not certain on that point.
Sue, could you, and I could maybe ask one of the others that come, of these midwives who come forward to testify, but maybe you could explain, in case others on this committee don't understand what a direct entry midwife is, or what are the requirements to be like. That would be a more appropriate question for you to answer first.
I can try, Senator Kutub. And just following Larry's comment, there are certified nurse practitioners who fall under the nursing board. This is a group of individual direct entry midwives that have their own licensing structure. They set the qualifications, the educational and training, and risk factors involved in providing services for home delivery. I don't have the figures on the number of individuals this group serves. I know they do, members of their group do, but it's a large number of mothers within the state of Oregon. I would feel more comfortable if they walk you through that, but if that helps you and the Senator understand the makeup of other professions that deliver babies, of course, besides licensed doctors.
Donalda, do you want to see if we have testimony? Would you?
Chairman, Senator Kutub, members of the committee, I'm Donalda Dodson with the Oregon Health Division, and I'm here to provide you some information about Senate Bill 611. Maybe I can help with some clarification. There are two types of midwives currently delivering service in Oregon. One of the certified nurse midwives are registered nurses with master's degrees to practice nursing. They generally provide prenatal care in clinical and private offices, and they perform labor and delivery services, as is noted here. The direct entry midwives provide community and home-based care, including home delivery. So that's probably the more distinctive thing. Most direct entry midwives have excellent and strong medical background and excellent clinical skills. The direct entry midwives provide a valuable alternative to women who are interested in this method of delivery. And last year, almost 1,000 Oregon women chose to deliver their babies at home, and most of these were delivered with direct entry midwives. And my testimony goes on to identify that Oregon is second only to Florida in the number of midwifery-assisted deliveries
with that being 13% of all those delivered in Oregon. And that national studies have even shown that there are lower incidence of problems with babies that are born utilizing midwifery services, both direct entry and nurse midwifery. And some of that can be because of their own selecting out processes that they do. They identify the kinds of clients that are acceptable for the types of services that they can provide so that they do not take on those clients that should not be delivered or provided care in their setting. The Health Division really strongly supports midwifery practice and believes that midwifery can contribute much to maternal and child health services. We believe in a high quality that can be assured and maintained only through licensure processes, and so we support mandatory licensure for these direct entry services. Currently, our statute does not define childbirth as practicing medicine, and so it created this direct entry midwifery board so that licensure could be provided to this level of service. And as I pointed out in the testimony, they go through a rigorous licensure exam. They have to assist in at least 25 deliveries. They have people that work with them. They have to provide this as a primary care themselves. They have to have written plans for emergency transportation. They have to know CPR. So they need to know these kinds of things to assure the quality of the health of that mother and child. However, as Sue has pointed out, voluntary licensure of direct entry midwives in Oregon has had limited impact because of the limited number that are currently electing to go to voluntary licensure. To date, there are 36 that are going through this process, which is about a third of what we anticipate to be 80 to 100 direct entry midwives available in the state. The Health Division really believes that this law should not sunset, but that it should be continued, and we strongly support the mandatory licensure for all direct entry midwives who offer this service to the public. We feel that what is being done currently is very good and that that should be continued. We are committed to improving the health of women and children, and we feel that all of us have a stake in the outcomes of these births, and that it's important that we assure this quality through licensure. Any questions?
Your testimony is that you support mandatory licensing. The 611A, is it mandatory or voluntary?
Okay.
It is voluntary, but your testimony is that you support mandatory. Okay. Have you provided, in fact, amendments to that effect or not?
Yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
Now, we discussed the matter of mandatory licensing at length in the Expanded Committee on Health and Human Services. We came to the conclusion that because of the limited number of people, even mandatory licensing doesn't even remotely answer the problem of finance. The midwives, I shouldn't say violently, I don't want to do violation here, your feelings, but they're very adamant that they don't want this.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to make it in 1993 when we enacted the board law and the licensing law. We tried to make it to where it was user-friendly, and I think we accomplished that. We allowed some opportunities for people to enter in or to retire if they were approaching that age without having to get involved over a period of years rather than just saying mandatory today it is. And we've tried to work with them in any way they could. They came in and personally asked to have their license fees increased in 1995, I believe, or 1997 anyway. And came in and are willing to do the same thing this time to majorly increase it in order to avoid having a mandatory licensing. The state of Oregon has not worked with them very well at all in any other way to ensure that they are able to get paid for the services that they give if they do become licensed. And that was the whole point of licensing to begin with, was that they would be able to access them and be paid through the Medicaid process of that Oregon has. That has not been successful. OMAP has continually turned their back on requests to do this unless they go through or they're involved in the different HMO organizations, which has not been open to them for various reasons. They've had problems with people being willing or companies to be willing to insure them. Hospitals don't want to give them privileges. It's just on and on and on and on. And my feeling is that I don't wish to make this a mandatory thing on some of them that are still in the process of not being paid enough that they can afford to mandatorily come in, and they're still willing to go out and do these services for little or nothing to their clients. I think as you look out in the audience here, you can see yourself the support that these folks are giving to their industry. This is the second time they've come up here, and we've worked long hours on it. And I just feel very much of a personal nature in my committee. I think back to me on it, as I recall, this was a unanimous decision, at least it was with all the people we had available at the time of the vote. And I, for one, am not interested at all in making this mandatory. I'd like to have them at least have another 2 years to see if they can pull this out of the hole. And this bill gives them a chance to go out and get funds and solicit funds. And the quicker we pass this, the quicker they're assured that they can go out and do that. And that is what I'd like to see done.
Okay. Actually, I'd like to ask either Susan or Donella whether the state can require a provider to accept direct entry midwives in any kind of a plan. Is that something that the state can do?
Senator Tutab, in the meetings I've had with the groups representing OMAP and providers, I don't believe the state has, that would be unprecedented. I don't believe the state has required that.
But that's also my understanding.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
I would say one step further. Neither have they come forth with any idea of how we could go about it and have OMAP pay for it without having to go through the HMO process either. So they've not been one bit helpful in trying to solve this thing other than the fact that they would recommend that it's mandatory, and as I said, we did pursue that. Even members of the midwives group pursued it, and it literally lacked any support in their group. And I think under the circumstances where they would be forced to join and yet not be allowed to be paid, I think it's just a crazy situation that we've got into.
I mean, it is a voluntary board right now. And you just came in on testimony for the mandatory, but I don't know. Senator Shields?
Well, I think, Senator Shields, you're right on target when you asked if there's any way the state can do it, because both Senator Fisher and I were on that committee in 93 that wrestled with exactly this issue. And I was worried then, as excited as I was about the bill, I was worried that all you had to do was to have HMOs kind of drag their feet and it's kind of, I don't know what you call it, but, you know, they know they ought to do something, but if you just drag your feet long enough, pretty soon nobody gets to the goal that they want. The number of midwives would go up, and I think Senator Fisher would agree, if we could ever get midwives on panels, then more people would start to register, and the problem would solve
itself. It was already way up when it first started, and if it would have continued, if that was paid, that would have been paid, I guess they would have grown over this period of time rather than have dropped back.
So what you have said is precisely the point. I mean, it's just a matter that HMOs or whoever, the health plan itself, have not, I mean, it's not that they say you can't do it, it's just that they drag their feet. And that's why the number of midwives has dropped off, because there's no advantage.
Although there is some risk for a provider to accept, a perceived risk at any rate. I'll let me state it that way. There is a perceived risk. And, doctors have to have malpractice insurance. And I'm not sure that these direct entry midwives have to have that. That is what one of the questions I will ask. But just by virtue of the fact that we've got somebody from the Department of Justice sitting here saying that we have a complaint that is being litigated at the circuit. Not only that, we have several complaints waiting actually either to be investigated or to be litigated, that for us as a state, the state, in licensing these individuals, it does raise some questions in my mind. If we make this license mandatory, a couple questions actually for Larry. If we make the license mandatory, will the state then be liable for what we are doing, even at this present time, the litigation that might come?
Chairman Qtub, I'm not sure I directly understand your question. If we have a licensing board that requires all direct entry midwives to be licensed, is the state somehow liable for that? The state is required to, the board is required to exercise due diligence and control in its licensing standards. In other words, they have to apply tests fairly. They have to do a decent job of making sure that people are certified. If that board fails to do a good job doing that, or if they mishandle complaints, investigations, subsequent sanction actions, lawsuits can result, and the board is covered by the Risk Management Division of DAS. So in that sense, yes, the state can be liable. Now, what happens is if the state is ultimately found liable, or the board is found liable, and the state is providing insurance coverage, that DAS would then eventually tax back or require the board to pay DAS an insurance premium, if you will, because they act as the insurance agent to recover those funds. So that would be an additional expense. They do have an expense as it is right now to get the insurance coverage.
And you talked about a case that's currently being litigated or and another complaint that, well, I didn't enumerate all of the things that you indicated, but is that a particular point? I'm wondering if you have any idea how long that particular case, the one that is being, that is, I guess, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, how much longer and how much more that might cost the state? You have any idea?
Sure, I'm Keith, but it's not clear. At this point, the case that is before the Ninth Circuit, there is a proposal for mediation. If the board goes out of existence as of midnight tonight, then there is no mediation possible because there is no board. And we would proceed on the lawsuit to get a judgment one way or the other. As it is right now, the action has been dismissed, so there is no liability to the state at this particular time. However, this particular action grew out of an investigation and subsequent action by the board against a licensed midwife. The board has since reversed itself and withdrawn those particular sanctions and has had some meetings to discuss different sanctions. And I believe the last time the board met, they came up with some different sanctions that they would like to impose. I know that there has been work in Wilson's shop to draw up the appropriate sanctions. I'm not sure whether the board has to certify that or not. But this case hasn't even gotten off the ground. Once there is a notice out to the licensed midwife, then there will be a hearing on the allegations in the notice that will be, in essence, a hearing before the board, and then there will be entitlement to appeal whatever the decision of that particular case is. That appeal will go up through the Oregon State Court system. That doesn't foreclose the attorney for the midwife in that particular case from filing suit again in U.S. District Court for violation of civil rights. So, you can go round and round on these cases. On the other hand, it could go very smoothly. Whatever the board does could be accepted by the licensed midwife, and the whole thing could go away. But there's no real way to tell one way or the other. This is just one of four complaints. And the other three have not been thoroughly investigated. There's been some preliminary investigation done, but I believe as well as the staff ran out of money, and so the cases were not investigated because they can't do that. Well, there's no money.
but has all of the money that you have articulated correctly, have funds from other sources been used besides the licensure fee to pay for any of the costs of the board thus far? Or is it just through the licensing
mechanism
that you have the money?
Senator Chutub, because there is an administrative, one administrative staff, and there are shared prorations for that staff, yes, you could say that other boards are supplementing this program.
Any other questions? Okay, if there, you folks hopefully will stand by. We need you for further questions. And we will call up Abigail Hoffer and Polly Cholet. Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Chairwoman Senator Chutub and honorable committee members, my name is Abigail Hoffer, and I'm a licensed direct entry midwife. Nervous, too. As I was reflecting on what to say today, or what you might be asking today, et cetera, outside of catching a quick Learjet to the Bahamas. I thought probably what I would talk about is what you would need to know, or what I would think you would need to know in order to move this board forward. And those, of course, are fiscal issues, as you've mentioned. I'm imagining that you would like us to show that we can be fiscally solvent, that we can be self-contained, that we will not borrow from other boards, and quite honestly, that we need to provide for some sort of develop a safety net for miscellaneous expenses as we've had in the past. And interestingly enough, those are our goals also. That's what we want. So at least we know we're working together. Now the question is, can we do that? And how do you know if we can do that? We can shake your hand and you can all hope. And we can say, okay, we'll do our best. And my sense is that's not going to go over. And so let me tell you what we have done and how we have addressed some of these issues, because we've actually been working very hard. And as you've heard, our numbers are small. We're a very committed, strong-willed group. And we have done quite a bit in the last very few months since this legislature has been in session. The first thing that we did as a small group, as we've heard, is we hired a lobbyist. So we had to come up with the money for that, which we've done. We have 7 regions in our state. And we actually have approximately 30 midwives who have pledged to spend $2,000 a year to renew their license. And that alone is a huge commitment. We know it better than just about anybody here, I think. But we actually have pledges from midwives who have said they would do that because they're committed to it. We also have actually pledges from, signed pledges from 10 unlicensed midwives who have also said that they're willing to assist us in terms of keeping our license voluntary and just supporting midwives in Oregon in general. We have formed 2 groups. We have not formed 2 groups. 2 groups have been formed. One group, I don't know, is there a name? The Oregon Midwifery Foundation. And what their goal currently is, of course, to get nonprofit status, but what they've done is they're looking to help in terms of education and also a scholarship fund for midwives to help with the $2,000. The other thing is there's another group called Friends of Oregon Midwives, and I can't speak for them because I don't represent them, but their whole mission statement says that they're dedicated to maintaining licensure in the state of Oregon, and whether that will be financial or however that will be for them, I can't say. But so those two things have been accomplished. The other thing that we've done is we've been working very diligently on fundraising. We currently have $12,000 in our budget that we have put together in the past 3 months that we didn't have 3 months ago. And I think for this very small group of women, that's pretty amazing. And I also think it shows our total commitment to making this work and to doing what we need to do to make that work. Along with that, we have actually approximately $10,000 in uncollected pledges. And I know that falls into that hope category, but I think it's pretty amazing that we've actually come up with the 12,000. We also have regions who have committed to raising $5,000 a year. We have 7 regions. We have 4 regions who are actually capable of doing that. The others would very much like to, but they're smaller groups, smaller regions, and financially that may not happen, as they did this year. And that is what allowed us to build our budget, as well as pay for our lobbyists and other expenses. So I think in terms of our history, we certainly haven't been sitting back hoping that you would support us and follow through with this. We've been working very diligently on this particular issue. I think for us, of course, as we work so diligently on this, we also see it as a way of supporting women and children in this state. And that, of course, is our true goal. Thank you.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Who is your lobby?
Town interpreter?
I would say you ought to be paying Senator Fisher.
Yes.
Because I actually haven't heard from him, but I have heard from Senator Fisher.
I've heard from a lot of you.
Dear Senator Kusev, I will say that, you know, it's not much, but last year, and actually Senator Shields can abide by this too, we did make cheesecake for all those legislators who so earnestly worked. And this year, I'll just warn you, it's not cheesecake. It will be pies. So you may want to pick your order.
Take the bun in.
Four more laps around the Capitol.
Chairman, Senator Cuba, members of the committee, my name is Holly Scholes. I'm the president of the Oregon Midwifery Council, and I'm also the I run a midwifery school in Portland, Oregon, named Birthingway Midwifery Center. And I'm also a little nervous, so would like to address the mandatory issue and then provide a little clarification on a couple of other things that came up in the previous testimony. The issue of mandatory licensing has come up repeatedly since the bill was originally conceptualized in 1993. And in truth, this is the only health-related license that is voluntary. We have a unique history in that midwifery has always been legal in this state. And it's legal up to this day. It's not illegal to help women have babies. We're concerned that in creating mandatory license that you would be creating a class of taking a group of practitioners who have been legal and making them illegal, creating criminals where there haven't been any. And that's a problem in a lot of ways. One way in which it's a problem is that in other states in which midwifery is illegal, there have been serious problems with medical referral and transport. If you know that in being an illegal practitioner, that if you enter into the system, that you're at risk of being arrested with all that that entails, you're more inclined to perhaps delay in transporting. And when you do transport, to perhaps send someone in unattended without medical records and leave the medical staff at the hospital to deal with the situation the best they can with very little information. And that is not in the best interest of mothers and babies. We're concerned that there would be the creation of these underground or illegal practitioners because we know, based on the figures that, you know, I know that Sue mentioned it, or maybe it was one of the other speakers mentioned that they suspect that there are about 90 or 100 midwives in total, of which about 35 are licensed. First of all, we've tried to identify exactly how many unlicensed midwives there are, and we come up with a variety of figures. So I'd be interested in knowing how solid that number is, really. I suspect that it's not a very solid number. What we do know is that most recent figures we have in 1997 figures, there were 194 home births by non-certified midwives. And if, in fact, there are 60 unlicensed, uncertified midwives in the state, that means each of them is doing two or three births a year. So we're talking very small midwifery practices. Most practitioners are probably not going to take on a $2,000 a year license because at this point they have very small practices, and probably because they choose to have very small practices and they work rurally or in religious communities or choose to have very small practices. And they're simply either going to stop providing services or they're going to provide them illegally. And my guess, based on looking at other states over the many years, is that they'll continue to provide services underground. And that does not serve the mothers and babies of Oregon. If, in fact, those midwives are not going to become licensed anyway, and this we've talked about with Senator Fisher, it doesn't resolve our fiscal issue, definitely, to require licensing. It only compounds and creates a new category of problems for us. It's also going to increase expenses for the board in terms of enforcement. If we know that there are 60 unlicensed midwives out there, and they're not licensed, and we suspect they're out there doing births, I think the licensing board would have an obligation to search out those midwives and discipline them. And that's going to be expensive, and you can only have to look north to Washington State to see exactly how expensive it is to try and locate and bring into the fold, if you will, midwives who have chosen not to be part of the system for whatever reason. And so we're, you know, in our, as we look at the scenario, we see mandatory licensing as creating a slew of problems that we currently don't have to deal with, medical transport problems and enforcement problems, simultaneously not resolving our fiscal problems. So we would be breaking something worse that is working in every way except fiscally. And so we really feel pretty strongly as a group and individually that that is not going to be a good way to go for us. Yes, I just should. I'll recognize the officials for that. I don't do this every day. I'm a mother. Yes.
I think I'll still ask the chair if I can ask you.
Yes, go right ahead.
I do appreciate your permission, huh? In addition to everything that you've outlined, which I think is right on target, isn't there also a problem of religious freedom? When we heard this bill in 93, there was some testimony about an old Russian religious community that had midwives.
Right, and it's been suggested that we could create religious exemptions, which could result in a mass conversion to some interesting religion, potentially, and still not resolve the problem. So we've tried to look at this at a lot of different angles, and what we keep coming back to is we need to have a fiscal solution. By including the provision in which is included in the amendments that allows the board to accept donations and grants, that's the purpose of this fundraising, is so that we can donate the $12,000 and $10,000, whatever, to help resolve that issue. Also, I believe there's an amendment in there currently that says if we're not fiscally viable by March of the year 2000, that we are sunsetted automatically. So there is a bit of a time frame for us there to work, and it's not like you're giving us carte blanche, go spend all the money you want, but rather we have to demonstrate that we are fiscally viable by that point. The number 24 midwives who indicated that they were willing to be licensed, we're not a huge organization. We don't have a polling agency. We have contacted people over time, and at this point we've contacted 29 individuals who have indicated, yes, they're willing to renew their license for $2,000. We haven't had any specifically, we don't have a huge contingent saying, no, they won't, but there are people we haven't spoken to. So the figures that you have in front of you are based on, I believe, 24, and so that is an increased number since then. I look at my list here.
You said that you haven't, don't you have access to all of the names of the license?
We do. Reaching them is always a challenge.
So you have attempted to reach them?
Yes, you have.
Okay. What do you attribute the reduction in the number of licensed midwives?
I think in large measure it is because of the failure to be able to receive OMAC reimbursement. The purpose of the legislation and the reason why it's voluntary, it's kind of an interesting concept to, if the purpose of the license is to enable LMAT reimbursement, medical assistance reimbursement. You can't make that mandatory. You can't make someone get a license to get medical reimbursement. And that is the primary thrust of the enabling legislation, was to allow for Medicaid reimbursement. When practitioners, many of whom have small practices, most of the midwives practice in practices of, you know, fewer than 15 births a year. And, you know, we don't make that much money. So, you know, if your births aren't going to be coming from LMAP, for many people, the expense and the additional regulation and restrictions on our practice that come from being licensed aren't worth the trade-off, you know. We've been, working with the OMAP people. We've had dialogue. We've had meetings. We're still hammering that out. Of course, Oregon Health Plan is a very complex plan with a lot of room in there for differences of opinion about how things are supposed to be. And our legislative intent is for us to work and play well together, and we've certainly been trying to do that.
And the other question I would have is, in the 9901 biennium, there's $9,200 budgeted for legal expenses.
Right.
And if that is exceeded, how would you plan to be able to cover those?
Our hope is that, or our plan is that with 30 licensed practitioners at $2,000 a year, that in itself will meet our budgetary requirements, which include the $9,000. In addition to that, we have ongoing fundraising. And so the commitment that we have is to make sure that the board is solvent and make grants and donations as necessary to maintain solvency.
Okay, so through grants and donations.
Right.
And that would supplement.
Right.
Madam Chair, that's what this bill actually accomplishes. It has that portion in there that allows them to do that. And
at this point, we haven't been able to. So.
That's one reason I pushed so hard to try to get a hearing on this and get it going, because time is of the essence, and they need to get that done. And I would have to second what the lady here is saying about this. It's been my observation, although I haven't gone through it personally physically, that when this time happens, it happens. And somebody's going to be around there to help out. It's just a natural situation. And so all somebody has to do is dawdle a little bit to get into the hospital, and they're going to have somebody help them at home. And I, for one, do not wish to make this something that has to go underground, or that people have to worry about violating laws, or maybe being in trouble for telling them to stop them by a neighbor's place when they get a call for help and saying, well, you need to be transported and something like this. And because that happened, then they get accused of being a midwife and they have to try to protect themselves and one thing or another. It's just not a good situation. And this whole effort was to be able to allow them, because Medicaid flat out said that unless they were licensed, they couldn't be paid. So they came up and came in as voluntary licensing. The ones that didn't go ahead and license were ones that didn't wish to be involved with the Medicaid program. And so there was about, if I recall, 59, was there not?
55.
So there was a good third plus or half more than what they have now licensed and did get out of it, because they were literally disillusioned with the reaction to the state to their program.
Okay. We're hopeful for the future, though, that we can, but without the license, we can go nowhere with OMS.
Okay. Thank you very much for your
Thank
testimony.
You.
I will call up three individuals at a time, because we've got three chairs up here. And because we want to get through this, I'd like to have everybody able to come up here and testify that has signed up. So,
Madam Chair, do you intend to have a vote on this today?
No.
Okay, I have some business, and I don't want people to think I'm running out on you, but you have my full support, and I need to, if you would give me permission, to go ahead and go. But thank you so much for coming up here and doing this all over again. I really appreciate it.
I've seen them before.
Yeah, in our community.
Mm-hmm.
We have the same kind of a response. You can see how interested we are.
Okay.
Daphne Singing Tree, DJ Kalman, and Aya. Aya.
The witnesses are coming up. I want to ask a question. Does that, if we don't have a workstation today, does that mean the whole thing sunsets?
just to say staff go and check on that. In Section 5 of the bill, it does allow that if we have an effective date after midnight, that it will be retroactive if we pass the bill. It doesn't sunset and we have to start it up again. It will be retroactive. So we're okay.
So sunset the same when the bill passes, it will go back to July 1.
If you read Section 5, lines 26, 27, 28. Senator George?
Madam Chair, I have a similar problem to Senator Fisher. I have a meeting in Newport this evening, so I'll leave in a little bit. I want everyone to know I was leaving. And I would like to comment that it's been 1 hour and 10 minutes, and we have a lot of children and little babies out here, and I think it's just marvelous how good they are.
Right.
It's been fun to listen to them and watch it.
And let me tell you, they behave better than he does.
I'm
so we have to have this too.
Okay.
Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee, my name is Daphne Singingtree. I'm a licensed direct entry midwife in Oregon. I'm also currently a member of the Board of Direct Entry Midwifery and a board member of the Midwifery Education and Accreditation Council. My testimony today is as an individual, not as a representative of the board or any other organization that I am a board member of or hold executive directorship of or affiliated with. I'm here just as an individual. I understand that the committee's interest here today is the fiscal solvency of a licensing board. The outcome of your decision has a profound effect on the future of midwifery, not only in Oregon, but all over the country. All over the United States, licensing laws are changing to reflect the current changes in the expanding field of midwifery. Other states with direct entry licensing recognize the clear benefits to the public health in maintaining and supporting independent licensing boards for direct entry midwives. States such as Arizona, Florida, and New Mexico all subsidize their boards and ensure that midwives, by law, can easily bill Medicaid. This is translated into better outcomes for less money. However, we were clearly told we didn't have a chance if we asked for general funds to subsidize the board. So we're proposing simply that we fund the board ourselves. The licensing for midwives is so important for the safety and welfare of the mothers and babies of Oregon that it's on you, the elected representatives of the people, to find a way to keep the board in place. If Senate Bill 611 dies, it will have a devastating effect in many ways. I am the executive director of the Oregon School of Midwifery, and I work with the future generation of midwives. My students work very hard, pay tuition to become a professional midwife. They're looking at a career, to be able to make a living, to be able to use emergency medications and oxygen legally. And to being licensed is a piece of that. Not having a license will affect all of these women. We need more midwives. I've spent my entire life to validate alternative methods of training midwives. To see licensing die in Oregon is a giant step backwards. I also operate a state licensed birth center in Eugene. 70% of our deliveries are Medicaid. Some of these women deliver in the birth center because they live a long ways away from the hospital, or some because they live in inadequate housing. Some live in school buses, some live in trailers, and they're able to come to our birth center and have their babies there and have them paid for by Medicaid. If licensing dies, these women will lose this option. And for the most of the population that I serve, most will continue to have their babies at home or outside of the hospital. They'll just look for the lowest cost midwife they can find, and in some cases, that may be an unattended home birth. I'm expecting my first grandchild in September. My son and his wife live about 2 hours away from me. And while I plan on catching the baby and they plan a home birth, I wanted them to have a local midwife to do prenatal care, to be objective in case there's a problem. And they needed to choose a midwife they were comfortable with, somebody that they got along with well personally, and for somebody that they would feel safe with. As a consumer of midwifery care, as parents, Licensing was a simple, easy way for them to know that the midwife that they picked met certain standards and guidelines for safety. Now, granted, my son may know a little bit more about midwifery than your average parent, but this is it's a simple way for consumers to know. Licensing protects the safety and mothers and babies who deliver outside of the hospital. All licensed midwives must meet a certain standard of training and experience and agree to practice by certain guidelines and protocols that ensure that they will not deliver certain risk factors at home, such as twins or breaches. It also provides a mechanism for complaints or sanctions in the rare cases it's needed. Licensing protects consumers. You need a license to cut somebody's hair in this country, and I don't think our children deserve any less. Parents should have the option to choose a licensed midwife. Without licensing, midwives are still going to deliver babies outside of the hospital, but there'll be nothing in place to ensure competency and quality of care that consumers receive. Imagine for a minute that you are an uninsured parent and your child was hit by a car and needing to be in intensive care for who knows how long to save that child's life. Would you stop and say, wait a minute, how much is this going to cost? And how will I pay for it later? Of course you wouldn't. Like any parent, you would do anything to save the life of your child. Even if it meant making payments for the rest of your life, or even if it meant going into bankruptcy, because the life of a child transcends money. Children's lives are precious. It is clearly in the public interest to have a mechanism for licensing. While it's your task today to look at the fiscal viability of the licensing board, it is your greater responsibility for the health and safety of the mothers and babies of the state of Oregon. Our communities have raised a significant portion of the funds needed. While I know you may be hesitant to rely on outside funding for professional boards, please recognize the unique nature of this situation and do not let licensing die. This bill was originally intended as a way of midwives to accept Medicaid reimbursement. By an overwhelming majority, the 1993 legislature recognized the value of midwifery care, including our unique ability to give time and attention to at-risk mothers who need that attention a midwife can bring for better outcomes. The will of the legislators has been undermined by OMAC rules and funneling all pregnant women into HMO. A very simple and effective solution to this problem is simply to ask that there be a maternity care exemption and all pregnant women in Oregon can have an open card which funnels them out of the HMO system. Currently, the only way midwives are getting paid is if midwives have what's called an open card or fee-for-service card. They're only eligible in the last trimester of their pregnancy. And it is a very big hassle for our women to get them. It causes, lots of problems and in some cases delays until the last trimester of pregnancy. And it's a very simple, will not cost the state any money to simply make it a law that there's a maternity exemption and women are eligible for open cards. That would solve the problem of getting midwives onto HMO panels. Now, if this bill moves forward, I am very close to getting on an HMO panel. I have to get malpractice insurance to the tune of $1.3 million. But as soon as I get malpractice insurance, I can lobby those HMOs, and sooner or later they'll have to let us in. But in the meantime, there's a system in place. It's called an open medical card, and all you need to do is make an open medical card mandatory, and that's going to solve your fiscal problem. So it would not only encourage more midwives to become licensed, it will save the state money and hospital fees and provide better care. So please help me keep the licensing board in place so we can continue to protect the lives of mothers and babies.
Daphne, you said that the birthing center, I guess, where you're working, yes, has 70% Oregon Health Plan reimbursement. How much are you reimbursed?
$1,500. We provide an additional case as approximate. We also provide case management, which is ongoing
social kinds of work for at-risk mothers, and that adds another $300 to $500, depending on the situation. So approximately $2,000. And because we are a state-licensed facility, we're also getting an additional $400 for our facility fee. So, you know, roughly about between $2,400 and $2,500, and that's compared to about $6,000 for a hospital delivery.
DJ Kalman. My name is DJ Kalman. I reside in Garden Home, and I'm the state chair of the Public Choice and Healthcare Coalition, which goes by the acronym of PEACH. And I'm going to be very brief because I ran over here on my lunch break and quite literally have to run back. We just wanted to say that the Public Choice and Healthcare Coalition, which represents we're a statewide group of joint healthcare consumers and healthcare professionals, supports the midwives in their effort to stay licensed because our consumers want access to the services of direct entry midwives. And this voluntary licensure gives an aspect of quality control. There's a lot of people that would like to know that the training somebody has. And so they support it. And that is basically all I have to say.
Thank you.
Good.
Waiting for you to look at. Aya.
Senator Kitov and the remaining committee members. I'm here today because I'm new to the area. I have been, until recently, illegally practicing midwife in the state of Hawaii. There is a big demand for midwives there as well as here. I'm encouraged to see the progress happening here. In our last legislative session, we became legal. I want to throw a little bit of a different light on. I'm sure other people would want to do the same. But in Daphne's testimony, she mentioned that while this is a particularly fiscally directed meeting, there's a much bigger issue, and that is the safety and the well-being of a mother as she transitions into motherhood. And it's my testimony, because I was practicing in an illegal status, that it is critical that we have a cohesive body that is trying to make progress on this issue. I myself covered my tail by working with a naturopathic physician, but there were many other midwives who, upon transporting to the hospital, received mistreatment, is probably a good adjective. No longer was the mother and child the main issue, the safe delivery of the baby, but it was more the politics involved, who knew who, do you know this doctor, you know, where are these medical records, why are they in this particular order? It was a lot of complication. The primary issue for me as a midwife is to ensure that the woman faced this particular hurdle in her life with absolutely no fear. A hospital situation is unfamiliar. She is surrounded by strangers entering and leaving the room at their whim. there are so many. I wish I was better prepared. I'm also representing today Rosemary Cavallo, who's down in the Ashland area. And she wanted me to state for her that she does support the licensing, and she is also willing to pay whatever fee is set. And I would like to make myself on that number, too. I am willing to pay and go through the process of being licensed here as well. That's basically it. I just want to really throw the light back on the safety of mother and child here and the factors that we've all researched, at least most of these women in the room. We very well understand the risk to the mother when she is in an unfamiliar environment trying to go through this. And I just, she's much better off in her own home with people that she feels trusting of. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions this time?
Senator Yee?
So in Hawaii, do they make it mandatory for licenses?
No, it's their current process. Right now they're trying to decide. But it was an illegal status, which means that it wasn't directly illegal to practice. But we would always have to say, I was a friend of, I happened along the birth. Or, you know, there was so much room for people that weren't qualified. So I personally support a licensing board. I think voluntary licensure is adequate for this situation because parents-to-be, if they're conscious enough to be considering home birth, they're more than likely conscious enough to double-check and find somebody that's qualified and feels comfortable for them. It's a very, you know, this is life issue. This is not a minor, like, which college should I attend? This is like, will I live? Will my child live? So people should have that personal responsibility, find someone that is qualified. So I support a voluntary licensing.
Daphne, I have one other question for you. The Bristol Center that you work at, is OMAP a fee-for-service?
Yes, it pays fee-for-service. So we need to have what's called an open medical card. And under current OMAP rules, a woman is eligible for an open medical card, and she can have her baby. In our birth center, we also have a home birth practice. So we do actually the majority of our births in people's homes and then just a smaller number in the birthing center. And so my situation is the same as all the other midwives in the state, that they're required to have an open medical card. And what the hoops that these women have to jump through to get their open cards are becoming smaller and smaller hoops that are more and more difficult to go through. And it's very problematic. For example, because they can only get an open medical card in the last trimester of their pregnancy, if there's tests or lab works or ultrasounds or anything that they need to get in the beginning of their pregnancy, well, sometimes we have to delay treatment. Or they have to pay out of pocket. It's, you know, and we have been in discussions with OMAP on changing those rules, but certainly if the original intention of the law was supported and just a simple, very simple requirement that a maternity exemption for open cards be allowed. That is very standard in insurance industries. OMAP won't like it, but it's not difficult.
Thank you.
Senator, may I say one last thing? I just wanted to point out again that, for instance, Hawaii, like you mentioned, there are a lot of states that are going through legislative reviews and revisions on this issue, and it's really critical that Oregon stand up and speak up for mothers and children. Basically.
Thanks. Dr. Lay? I understand you need to keep going. I apologize for keeping you waiting.
Senator Keita, members of the committee, I'm Dr. James Lay. I'm a pediatrician here in Salem. I represent the Oregon Medical Association and the Oregon Pediatric Society. We're here to testify in favor today of Senate Bill 611. And to offer our support to the other comments that have been raised here, basically that the outcome that we're interested in here are healthy mothers and healthy babies. And if a voluntary registration program is in effect and that suffices, that sounds adequate. If everybody says mandatory is necessary, we'd go along with that. But we certainly support that concept of having a voluntary registration board for entry midwives.
Thank you. Senator Field.
There seemed to be some alarm earlier, and I'm sorry more of the committee isn't here, about investigations and the costs in these first couple of years and some of the suits. None of this is I'm just asking, I guess. This is not atypical. I mean, in the OMA, you certainly have challenges at times and suits and so on. What's your feeling about this?
Well, I guess I didn't understand exactly to whom the suit was directed. Was the board being challenged because they were trying to discipline somebody? And if that was the issue, that happens all the time with the doctors. The doctors, you know, if somebody loses their license or is being challenged, they can certainly go and contest that and try to sue the board or whatever. But the Board of Medical Examiners just falls to the carpet periodically, and that's just part of the game, and you have to be prepared for that.
I just wanted to clarify.
Right, and I think that's an important clarification.
And there was one other clarification.
Senator?
As a pediatrician, how do you feel about the, we got testimony from the health division a while ago, and she read the national exam and the various levels of training that they get. How do you feel about the training?
I personally am not acquainted with the training per se, in the sense that I haven't looked at the syllabus or anything like this. I can tell you from my own personal experience, I've been here in Salem for almost 22 years now. And before we had any kind of voluntary registry and before we had people sort of, you know, talking and making more of a group effort, and the number of out-of-hospital deliveries was approximately 5%. My own experience has been is that the general outcome for the mothers and for the babies has improved with this whole concept. And instead of having people doing things out illegally or in the shadows of the dark, whatever, and not having contact, not keeping up with what's happening, and you're talking with other people, sharing the camaraderie, we do a big disservice to those mothers and especially to the babies, because I take care of the babies. And the state ends up, if you have a bad baby, you know, the state ends up taking a lot of money taking care of those babies. So it's for our benefit to prevent those, the bad outcomes.
Thank you. Those are helpful.
Thank you, Doctor. I'd like to call up Jessica Ruper, Marilyn Milestone, and Pamela Hines. How? No. Yes. I am going to, 5 o'clock, I also have an appointment, and this committee will end at 5 o'clock. So, you know, try not to repeat everything that Ben said that we do in here.
I'm Jessica Ripper from Ashland, and I'm here basically in support of Maureen Mitchell, one of the 4 licensed midwives in that area. And she is in support of reinstating $2,000 to have her license reinstated and be moving forward in this movement. And I think that it's definite movement towards freedom of an individual to be not in captive of fear, to think that this is the only way for them to come into bringing a child into the world. So I think that this is really important movement worldwide to start out here in Oregon. And I just want to thank everybody for being here.
It's taking the time. We've kind of gone full circle, isn't it?
Yeah. There we go.
This is a new thing, but it's an old thing. Okay. Thank you, Jessica.
My name is Marilyn Milestone. I'm not very good with the formalities here, but I want to thank all of you for listening to us today. I'm from the Portland area. I'm a licensed direct entry midwife. I've been practicing midwifery for 20 years now. I'm the regional rep in the Portland area, and so I'm one of the 7 regions that was discussed in the Portland, and I'm in the Portland and outlying area. Our area covers the Gresham all the way down into the Woodburn and area of Silverton, and then we go all the way out to the northern Oregon coast. So we have quite a range of area that our region covers. What I just wanted to say was that in our region, we are committed to working towards fundraising on an annual basis, at least $5,000 a year to help support our board and our licensed midwives that are working in our area so that we can maintain a license. If it's at $2,000 a year for us as individuals, we are committed to paying that, by being one of many.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Mona Hines Powell, and I'm a student midwife currently attending Livingway Midwifery School. I'm in my 3rd and final year, and it is my hope in the next year to finish my birth, accomplish what is needed to become licensed. And I just want to say that I would really hope that we can keep this an option for Oregon families. It really breaks my heart to think that the only people that could afford to have a home birth are the upper middle class or the wealthy. And I think it's a travesty. We would rob a lot of families from the beauty and the joy of having a home birth and from the safety as well. And so I just wanted to say, too, at my school, there's approximately 25 to 30 students at my school, and there are currently three schools in the state. And the majority of the women at my school back the fundraising that's going on, and we also hope to become licensed as well. And so we have a lot of women who are on the verge of becoming licensed in the state, aside from the midwives that are currently established.
Okay, before you go, any of you can answer this question. First of all, are you speaking primarily about the mandatory portion of this license, that you're in fear that if this is taken away, or the voluntary portion, or because actually if this were to sunset, you would not be illegal in providing this midwifery service. You just may not be able to get reimbursed for it. And I'm sure that would be a concern if you do this as a profession. So I understand that concern, but I want to be clear about what it is I'm hearing here. Here's how I'll pose the question. Are you in favor or support of a mandatory license or a voluntary license?
Madam Chair, it's my opinion for me personally. I am definitely in favor of voluntary licensing. I believe that every woman should have the choice of the provider that she chooses. And I think that it would be really horrible to see midwifery become criminalized in our state.
I'm personally desiring and wishing to see that this board would continue to let this be a voluntary license. As I see this, and it's been brought up time and time again in this hearing, that this is a fiscal issue, and that the mandatory in what I have, in the people that I've talked to, I'm a part of the Oregon Midwifery Council, I've been to the meetings, there just does not seem like it being a mandatory license is going to resolve the fiscal problem here. I'm a voluntary. And I think it's a unique position that we are in the state of Oregon, and that's very positive.
Actually, it could help to solve the problem if it were mandatory, and let me tell you how.
Sure.
If you wanted to practice midwifery, you would have to pay to be licensed, and therefore under the board. Now, it has been positive that many would practice secretly or, you know,
mm-hmm.
But as soon as you get into a complication, which occasionally it will happen, that's where there's a disincentive to go and get help.
And I have to ask, why change a situation that is working really well into a situation that's not going to work as well? In the state of Oregon, all of us that are licensed right now have been working really hard to develop a positive rapport with the hospitals and the staff if we are transporting, and we're really welcomed there, and it's a safe and it's a comfortable environment for all of us because we have a mutual respect, and we've worked a long time to be able to develop this. What is mandatory? How is that really going to change it? Especially since there's no guarantee that all of the people that are not licensed are going to become licensed. I don't see how it will resolve that or make that any better, improve it at all.
I'm personally in favor of a voluntary license, considering the fact that licensing opens the spectrum of how many people can midwives help, in the sense of going into hospitals even and relating to the doctors in the sense that, yes, I do have this license that shows my qualifications. And I think that opens the eyes and awareness of a lot wider spectrum of without practicing with a license.
Okay, thank you very much. Celeste Kersey and Carrie Parrish and Patricia Kelly. Patrice.
Go ahead.
I'm Patrice Kelly. I'm also a student at Birthingway Mid-Street Center. I'm in the first year. There's eight other women in my class, and I know that the majority of us are planning on becoming licensed, so there is that. I don't want to repeat what someone else said. But I do want to say I have three children. My first child was born in New York in a state where midwifery is illegal. And I started at home and ended up in the hospital, and there was a lot of fear, and it was not a good experience. My other two were born here in Oregon, and it was perfect to know that that option was there, and it wouldn't be stressful if I had to go. So I see also that voluntary licensing is the way to go. Thank you.
Madam Chair and committee member.
I'm sorry.
Committee staff.
here.
My name is Celeste Kersey, and I am the mother of three children. I've had three home births. In my third birth, I specifically chose an insurance company that would pay for home birth because that was a really important thing to me. It only covered licensed midwives, not unlicensed. I have since been attending births for about 5.5 years, and I'm working on completing my requirements to become nationally certified as well as state licensed. I intend to do this in the coming year, so this bill is of crucial importance to me, and I wholeheartedly support voluntary licensing. Thank you.
Senator Kitab and city members. Short, sweet. My name is Carrie Parrish, and I attended Birthingway Midwifery School. Mostly the last few years I've been working internationally. 75% of women in the world give birth at home with midwives, and fields, houses, shacks. And it's also here in Oregon a wonderful option for women-centered care. And I know that midwives mostly can serve lower-income women because of the licensing and because it allows them to get OMF reimbursement and or insurance reimbursement. It's also important for licensing, enabling us to carry oxygen and use it in emergency situations, as well as hemorrhagic medicines. And those are important sort of stopgaps in the transport situation and or, you know, when difficulties arise. So I'm fully in support of voluntary licensing. Thanks.
$2,000.
Yes, and paying
$2,000. Did you hear that? Okay. I can't leave. Thank you very much. Beth? Sadly. Thank you. Beth? Is it Natasha? I forgot. Okay, Natasha, because I didn't cross the T. I was a little confused about that. Natasha? And Jennifer? Gallardo? Gallardo?
Senator Kutub and committee members. My name is Beth Stagley, and I'm the mother of two, and my second birth, well, both were home births. The second one was paid for by OMAP, and which was invaluable to my experience of just not even having that available to me, to have the licensed midwife paid for. In addition, I attend births, and probably within the next biennium, will be ready to get my own license, which I would also be committed to paying the $2,000, and I'm also in support of the voluntary nature of this bill. Thank you.
I was getting ready to write it down, and it left me, so I'll come back to you.
Senator Kitab, Senator Giles. My name is Natasha O'Connaghy, and I'm a licensed midwife. I'm a newly licensed midwife. This is my first year to practice, and I'm fully in support of a voluntary licensure and of paying the $2,000 fee. I'm from the Eugene region of the Oregon Midwifery Council, and I wanted to say that in our region, we have ongoing fundraising efforts. We have plans for workshops every 3 months. So the first one that we had raised $1,800, and that's an ongoing thing. We work with a group of unlicensed midwives as well who are very qualified women and also really committed to helping us in our fiscal endeavors. And so, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Shields, Senator Kitab. We just had an open house for my birth center.
Your name for the record.
Jennifer Gallardo. And anyhow, we just opened the doors to a new birth center in Tualatin, which is just south of Portland. And this licensing to pass, this is really crucial because I just signed a 5-year lease, which is worth $300,000. So I'm really praying hard. We have 6 births a month scheduled so far, and we will have more. We have 3 birthing suites. I've already gotten on to Blue Cross Blue Shield by being licensed, which is an HMO, so that's the first HMO down and several more to go. And I also have OHP clients. And it is crucial for the birth center for this to pass, and so that I can pay my rent with what I can do, and also so that I can suture and have oxygen if needed. And that's basically all I want to say. I'll probably go bankrupt if this doesn't pass, and I'll go move somewhere else and hide.
Well, there's honest testimony. I love it.
I did remember my question, Beth. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to ask you is, you said that you gave birth.
Mm-hmm.
And it indicates here that you're from Multnomah County.
Mm-hmm.
And was that in Multnomah County?
Mm-hmm.
Through OMAP?
Right. Like I think someone said earlier, through Daphne, I waited till my 3rd trimester to sign up with Oregon Health Plan in order for myself to be covered. Little hoops.
Okay. And the Tualatin Center, you have OMAP. I mean, you've got an agreement with OMAP. That's what I'm
understanding. Yes, I bill through OMAP. Also, when women have open cards, I have some clients with closed cards, and I'm doing their births free of charge until we can try to figure out a way to.
Well, it's very encouraging that Blue Cross Blue Shield is. Mm-hmm. How did you get accepted?
I went through, I know nothing about billing, I know nothing about HMOs, and I hate even dealing with that, so I hired a professional medical billing. Called American Medical Billing, and they actually have my applications in all the different HMOs that are used in Oregon. And we just got accepted to Blue Cross Blue Shield a month ago.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. I will call up Steve Corcoran. The fact that you're only inviting up one, does that mean there's not 3 more left? Just one?
Just one.
Wow.
That's it. Susie.
Madam Chair, I wasn't prepared to speak today, and I'm a little under the weather, but there was one element of midwifery care that I wanted to address. I'm a licensed midwife from Aurora, Oregon, and something that didn't come up today was that as midwives, we are probably one of the few healthcare providers that get to know our clients to such a personal degree that we provide many more services besides actual midwifery care, having to do with infant care, parenting, safety. We get to know families and are aware of any abuse situations that are going on and are able to intervene sometimes and steer families towards counseling. We help with dietary changes, referral services to appropriate healthcare practitioners that are psychologically in line with maybe where our clients are at. And it's those elements of midwifery care, I think, that separate us from other more allopathic providers. And I just wanted to bring that up before the hearing was completed.
Appreciate that, Senator Shields.
Yes, I just wanted to say this, and I want to say this with making sure that lobbyists from OMA don't get mad at me for saying this, but in the 1993 testimony that the midwives gave, they pointed out that there was a statistic that you folks spend about 45 minutes or an hour with your patient each month, and after the first examination, the average doctor really only has time to spend 2 or 3 minutes each month with a woman, and there is a really qualitative difference there.
I would say that the majority of my hour-long prenatal visits are directed more towards family problems, parenting issues, which, as we know in this country today, with families being isolated and the troubles that are going on, are vital to the future of our country.
Thank you.
Do you support a mandatory licensing program?
No, I don't.
We could just do a raising hand. Those in favor of 2,000 voluntary.
We could get that on the tape. I guess I should acknowledge how many people did that. I'm just assuming that the other way would be to do it, just to ask if anybody does support it, and then I would be imposing upon that person the wrath of the rest of the room, so I won't do that. You're for sure. I think what we will do is we're not going to move on this bill today, and couldn't even if we actually wanted to because of our committee membership, and I do apologize for that. It's near the end of the session, and what happens is we all have meetings, and in fact, I had 3 meetings at 3 o'clock, and I was here. So I missed another one, and I have one at 5 o'clock. I do appreciate you coming and testifying. It has opened my eyes a little bit about this direct entry midwifery. I still am somewhat concerned about the fiscal issues. I guess the one thing that I would say to you, the one hope that I would give about being able to raise funds, I don't know where you're doing that and how you're planning on raising any funds, because I think that you could, you know, you could bring this about, but sooner or later I think you're going to have to be able to stabilize and be self-supporting without having to raise funds. And I can see now how that can happen, because in asking what the reimbursement is for a birthing, you know, giving birth would help somebody to be able to sustain a license and actually maintain being in this profession. But I will say just an encouraging word that while it's very, very different in running for political office, and I know this isn't something to talk about, except that I'll just tell you, I never thought I could raise money to do that or the kind of money that you need to do it. And I just give that as a word of encouragement because I was able to. So I think you just need to tell your story and raise the funds, and you know where to do it. Mm-hmm. And there may be other places that you can do it, but I at this point, it looks to me like you're going to have to do that. Or you're not going to be solvent, and other boards or other licensees for other things are going to be having to cover, you know, your practice. And I'm sure you want to be able to do that yourself. Obviously, by what I've heard today and the willingness to raise for yourself the fees that are needed, and then you got to promise not to go out and let anybody run ads against us for raising your fee. How many percent?
Yeah, right.
Big rate.
Maybe we can just all get endorsements from the midwifery.
That's what we need to do. Anyway, that was not as much of a serious note, but it is kind of a frightening thing to look at the percentage this is raising, and it was kind of scary.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to make 2 comments before folks leave, and very quickly. One is that I have sat on Human Services substantive committees now for 4 sessions, and I really have never seen a group with more energy than the midwives. We all of the licensing groups come in front of us with substantive bills, and then in Ways and Means we see them at another level, and so if any group can raise money, this one will, because they've got the energy. The second thing I wanted to say real quickly is something I said earlier, but I still think it's true. When you started with high expectations in 1993 and lots of hope. I still believe that if we deal with the passive-aggressive behavior, and that's what I would call it, of those HMOs and people that tend to be obstructionists,
and get to the point where we settle the issues of the open card and whatever, that once more of these ladies end up on the panel, others will see their success, and the number of midwives will go up, and you will financially stabilize that way as well. I honestly believe that that'll work. Maybe you and I need to talk with the Oregon Health Plan a little bit about how they could be maybe a little less passive aggressive in that process.
Okay. What will happen next is we will have to have a work session on it. This is a public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
No, but it's closed to testimony unless you're invited to the podium to give answers. And probably most likely it would be somebody from the board or board members or whatever. You can come to observe.
And then you talk amongst yourselves and then you vote?
We vote on it.
And does that happen soon?
Before the session's out, hopefully.
Question is supposed to
Right, okay, that's right. It does go through this committee. This is a subcommittee. It will go then through full committee. And that will go to the floor of the House and Senate. And I don't believe it's been on either floor. So just with that in mind, it does have to move fairly quickly if it's going to go. Well, probably after I close the committee. We are in time. Okay, now you can ask.
I just wondered if you had addressed earlier that